Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 1:32 p.m. on Tuesday, March 17th, 2026. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Present today are Senator Olson, Senator Dunbar, Senator Gray Jackson, Senator Yount, myself, Senator Merrick. We have six items on today's agenda. I would like to recognize we have Representative Andrew Gray with us as well. The first up is House Bill 13, Municipal Property Tax Exemptions, by Representative Gray. We heard an introduction of this bill on March 3rd and took invited testimony. Are there any opening comments from the sponsor?
Thank you, Chair Merrick. I am grateful to you guys for hearing this bill today. Again, just a reminder, House Bill 13 offers five different ways for municipalities to make optional property tax exemptions that would hopefully help us get more housing that Alaskans can afford. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to open public testimony on House Bill 13. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Is there anyone online? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony. Questions or comments from committee members? Seeing none, Mr. Vice Chair. Brief at ease.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for House Bill 13, Work Draft 34-Lima Sierra 0194/Oscar, as our working document.
I'll object for explanation. My staff, Sorcia Hazelton, will review the changes in the committee substitute.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Sorcia Hazelton, staff to Chair Merrick and the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee. The committee substitute before you for House Bill 13 adds two sections. As background, the statute currently requires municipalities to refund taxpayers overpayment with 8% interest, regardless of current interest rates or which party is at fault. The changes in this CS result in municipalities being able to keep more of their money. Section 2 reduces that mandated interest payment to 3 percentage points over the 12th Federal Reserve District discount rate in effect on January 2nd of the year of the payment, when the overpayment is not the fault of the taxpayer. This interest rate is already in statute for some other types of interest payments, like prejudgment interest awarded in certain lawsuits. While the current interest rate means that the refund is not far off from the 8%, it still represents a savings for municipalities and a payment tied to the market. Section 3 eliminates the interest payment altogether in cases where the overpayment is the result of taxpayer error. These changes do result in a title change.
Thank you, Ms. Hazelton. Can you tell us where the impetus from this amendment came?
There is Alaska Municipal League resolution, so the communities have asked for this change.
Thank you. Questions from the committee members? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Further objection? Hearing none, Mr. Vice Chair.
Do we have any further discussion on the bill itself, Madam Chair?
Absolutely.
All right. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 13, version 34-Lima Sierra 0194/Oscar from committee with individual recommendations, accompanying fiscal note, and title change resolution, and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, House Bill 13 is moved from committee. We'll take a brief at ease. I call the committee back to order at 1:38 p.m. Next is Senate Bill 143, Municipal School Board Terms by Senator Yent. We heard this introduction invited in public testimony at the end of last session on May 15th. Senator, would you like to briefly reintroduce your bill? Mr. McKee, please place yourself on the record.
Ryan McKee, staff to Senator Yent. So SB 143 changes the length of terms, or gives the option for municipalities to change these. Currently, boroughs and municipalities are allowed to set lengths for assembly and mayoral terms, but are not granted the same ability to decide the term lengths for school board seats. SB 143 would grant municipalities and boroughs those abilities. The Mat-Su Borough, for example, has moved their assembly seat to four-year terms, which will see a cost savings to the borough since they no longer have to host elections in the off years. However, this legislation would not mandate that the terms are changed, but instead make this an option should local governments want to change the terms of their school board seats, as they're already allowed to do for assembly and mayoral seats.
Thank you for that explanation. Senator Yent.
Thank you, through the chair. If I may add, too, this would have to be at the pleasure of the voters. So even if the assembly were to vote on this, it would have to go to the voters and get approved.
Thank you. There's a proposed committee substitute. Mr. Vice Chair.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 143, Work Draft 34-Lima Sierra 0781/India, as our working document.
Thank you. I'll object for an explanation. Ms. Hazelton.
Again, for the record, Sorcia Hazelton, staff to Chair Merrick and the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee. The committee substitute for Senate Bill 143 adds a new Section 2 amending AS 2920-130 regarding city council composition and renumbering subsequent sections. This change allows second-class cities with a population of under 1,000 to choose how many members their councils have, as few as three and as many as seven. Currently, Title 29 requires councils of seven. In a community of 1,000 with 500 voters, that's 0.01% of their population. In a community of 40 with 20 voters, that's 35% of their population. For reference, Bethel is a community of 6,300 with 4,043 registered voters. Their council represents 0.1% of their population. That's the committee substitute.
Thank you, Ms. Hazelton. Questions or discussion? Senator Yent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, this amendment was brought to us by the Alaska Municipal League. It is a fantastic amendment. I think we should give consideration to smaller communities around Alaska and not put them in the stress or under the stress of having to have such a large body to represent such a small community. And I think this will make it a lot easier for them to fill out their seats. So if they choose to, they don't have to. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Yent. We are making the Alaska Municipal League's day today. I will remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the committee substitute? Seeing none, Mr. Vice Chair.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 143, version 34-Lima Sierra 0781/India from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Is there an objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 143 is moved from committee. We'll take a brief at ease. I call the committee back to order at 1:44 p.m. Next is Senate Bill 255, Muni Grant Land, Mat-Su Borough Transfer, also by Senator Yun. We heard an introduction to this bill on March 3rd and took invited testimony. Senator or Mr. McKee, do you have any opening comments? Seeing none, any questions or comments from committee members? Seeing none, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 255. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing no one, is there anyone online? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony. Any final questions or discussions before we look to the will of the committee? Seeing none, Mr. Vice Chair.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 255, version 34-Lima Sierra 1358/November from the committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes and authorize legislative legal services to make conforming changes.
Thank you. Is there an objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 255 is moved from committee. We'll take a brief at ease. I will call the committee back to order at 1:47 p.m. Next is Senate Bill 259, Property Tax Assessment Increases by Senator Bjorkman. We heard an introduction of this bill on March 3rd and took invited testimony. Are there any opening comments from the sponsor or his staff at this time?
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the esteemed Community and Regional Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Senator Jesse Bjorkman, and I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. The bill before you is designed for a specific optional purpose that municipalities can undertake at their choice, that is not a mandate, to limit the increases to assessed value to 5% per year. We introduced a version of the bill and have asked the committee to take up version H of the bill as a committee substitute, as we had some confusion with our drafters and our office as to what our intent was, and we believe that version H is achieves the desired result. Thank you.
Thank you. There is a proposed committee substitute. Mr. Vice Chair.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for Senate Bill 259, Work Draft 34-Lima Sierra 1249/H as our working document.
Thank you. I'll object for explanation. Senator or Ms. Bieber.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Savea Bieber, staff to Senator Bjorkman. Changes to SB 259 from version G to H are just in section 1, amends AS 2945110 subsection F to change the percentage amount to 5% or less, and clarifies that if enacted, the cap would be considered full and true value. This also disallows the state from penalizing a municipality for adopting an ordinance under the section.
Thank you, Ms. Bieber. Any questions or comments? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there further objection? Seeing to the adoption?
I won't. Yeah, that's fine, Madam Chair.
Okay, without objection, the committee substitute version H is before us. Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm trying to understand here. I'm reading the other version. So it was may not be less than 5%. So it had to be 5% or greater. So that didn't make a lot of sense. So that changes to greater. But my question is, I guess, why have that in there at all? That is, if it's optional for the local government. So the issue here, right, is that there is no – the state law doesn't allow them to put their own cap on the true value or the assessed value, right? But if we're going to give them that ability, why limit them to 5% or greater? Why not just say whatever you local government deem is appropriate? This is my question to the sponsor.
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Dunbar. The desire is for this cap to really serve as a smoothing mechanism and to disallow spikes in assessments that really offer taxpayers a lot of heartburn when folks in your municipality receive green cards and they see their assessed values go up by quite a lot. That is cause for concern. And the 5% limit is designed to kind of smooth out those bumps. Anything more than 5%, when you start to go north of there, I think is where you start to see some of the spikes in assessed value that would be troubling to many Alaskans. And as we look at averages and how assessed values increase over time, that 5% is designed to be a smoothing mechanism. If we allowed for optionality above 5%, you would still have significant spikes as well as probably a compounding of those spikes with percent increases that would be what essentially amounts to compound interest, one high percentage after another. Oftentimes when we've seen caps like this imposed, we could look at the model that hospitals use for their pricing. They have an imposed cap increase as well. Well, hospitals have figured out that they can and will many times take the maximum cap allowed for their full price increase so that they can make sure they're going to be okay. I don't think that's the strategy we want to impose with assessed values and encouraging a lower cap number. Again, this is all optional. If municipalities don't want to take this up, they can just roll with the full and true value. But I think having a number that would correspond to what folks might recognize as a smoothing of assessed values makes more sense than allowing a higher one that people would still recognize spikes from.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Okay, can I ask a different question, Madam
Yes,
Chair?
Please.
So I believe this is – and I don't have the – I didn't see the exact verse, but I think this only applies to permanent place of abode. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So is that I think the language we use in Municipality of Anchorage is primary residence for their property tax exemption. Is that intended to be the same – the term instead of the same meaning?
Through the chair to Senator Dunbar, yes, that is exactly the same, yes.
And so rental properties, folks that are in long-term rentals, are they able to take advantage of this? of this limit in the increase to their assessed value.
To the extent that they pay property taxes on the property that they live in, yes.
Well, maybe I should ask the assessor. Is the assessor online?
Yes, we have Dan Nelson, the state assessor from the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, online. Mr. Nelson?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Dunbar. Number two on this work draft states that must require that the real property is owned and occupied as a permanent place abode for who occupies the real property for 185 days.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
During the calendar year. Yes.
Thank you. Can you please state your name and affiliation for the record, please?
Dan Nelson, state assessor. Excuse me.
Thank you. Senator Dunbar.
Follow up, Mr. Nelson. So in Anchorage, we have a large number of significant multifamily apartment complexes that are not owned by the people that live in them. Would those large complexes be able to take advantage of this limiting of their assessed value?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, Dan Nelson, state assessor. I am kind of confused by the wording of number two. It requires them to that the real property is owned and occupied by the property owner. So I am confused about that wording.
I mean, the way I interpret it is that the person that owns the property has to live in the property for 185 days. Is that the intent? I guess I'll ask the sponsor.
Excuse me.
Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you. Through the chair to Senator Dunbar. The language is plain in that it is what it is, and as it pertains to any renter who might pay property tax where they live, I don't know what arrangements could be made, but we can't live in a world where we pretend somehow that rental markets don't bear the burden of property taxes, right? And so there are other potential optional things that we could do and include. However, you still have the lever of a mill rate that is available to people as we look at what adjustments can be made. The purpose of this bill is primarily focused on folks who own their own home. Could someone benefit if they rented in a multifamily situation where the owner of that property also lives in one of those units and maybe a fourplex? I don't know. That's an interesting question. But the bill really is designed for people who own their own home and they are feeling impacted by rising assessed values, especially senior citizens, especially single-income households who these rising property tax assessments hit hard.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll follow up then. Question for Mr. Nelson. In Anchorage, where we are at the property tax cap, so you know the mill rate is spread through all of the various properties. If we were to sort of hold down the assessed value of the single family properties or those primary residences, but allow the assessed value of the apartment complexes to rise, would that shift property tax onto those buildings where the renters live?
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, Dan Nelson, state assessor. Yes, the tax cap would shift the burden to long-term. So long-term owners would benefit from the cap assessment. New buyers would pay taxes based on the market value. And then with the rental units not being capped, we would have create inequity, and it would kind of discourage mobility and distort the housing market.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair.
Yes, thank you.
So a question for the assessor. Is there a way to craft an amendment so that those kind of residential multifamily properties could benefit from this, as the sponsor says, smoothing of assessments, while not giving the benefit to large commercial properties, for example, you know, the box stores and whatnot. Because I do think there is a distinction in most folks' mind between those two things, but I'm wondering if legally we are able to do that or if that will run into some kind of equal protection or other legal challenge.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, Dan Nelson, state assessor, I think that would create an issue. I don't think we can do two tax rates. Is that correct? For a commercial and cap a commercial versus a residential, I'd have to check into that.
Can I follow up, Manager?
Yes.
My understanding is we can't apply a different mill rate, but we've never done something like this where we are limiting assessments that I know of. And so I'm just wondering if it's legally possible to do it.
Through the chair, Senator Dunbar, Dan Nelson, state assessor, I would have to look into that question to make sure that it is possible.
Thank you, Mr. Nelson. We can also check with legislative legal. Right now, we'll move to Senator Yunt.
Thank you. More of a comment than anything. I believe, and again, you'll talk with Ledge Legal if you want, I believe you can go up to a $75,000 exemption for residential, so which would pass the burden. You create the same mill rate. You have the same mill rate because you have to, and then you give a residential exemption. And so that would, in a sense, pass the burden onto commercial properties. And so I don't want to speak for Mr. Dunbar, but I think what he's worried about is a possible unintended consequence here where if you – give a discount to folks who own their personal homes, are you passing the burden on to those who own apartment buildings? And so, in a sense, you could be. My concern would be there are a lot of people in apartments who can afford to eventually go own a home and then would enjoy the benefits of this residential exemption. But for the ones that could never afford to own, perhaps they would get stuck with the rising property taxes on multifamily. So that could be a potential unintended consequence. Commercial, if you made it for all residential properties, then commercial would obviously feel it, right? Which they're going to feel it a little bit in scenario A anyways. But, without question, you have a budget and you're up against the tax cap or you're not. You have to balance the budget. And so who shares in that more? When I was on the local assembly in the Matsu Borough, I drastically increased our senior and disabled vet property exemption. That means I have to pay more because I'm neither a senior or a disabled vet, right? And so there's always going to be some potential unintended consequences. It's just making sure you understand them before it happens. But this could lead to more of a burden on apartment buildings possibly, it would in commercial, and then would it hold back renters from potentially becoming owners? Because, if your property taxes rise on your multifamily building, the owner's going to have to increase rents to make it work. And then one quick question, and I'm not sure, and maybe I missed this earlier, so I apologize, but would this – so VA loans, FHA loans, they have very low down payment programs available for people all the way to fourplexes, so like a veteran can buy a fourplex with 0% down. So if the veteran lives in the fourplex, would they get the exemption on the entire structure, or would they get it on one quarter of it? If it was a duplex, would it be the whole structure, or would it be half of it? So thanks.
Thank you. Senator Bjorkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Senator Yunt, I don't know the answer to that question. We can find out more. I think when we look at the option of splitting the tax roll, Senator Dunbar, like you had mentioned, other states have started to do that. And there are some examples out there of splitting the tax roll for different purposes. This is through an optional exemption. Again, if a municipality doesn't want to do this, they don't have to do it. It's entirely optional. the fact that this really smoothing of assessment increases for residential properties, I think, would benefit folks who would live in rental units, because what we have here in this state, because of how we craft full and true value with limited information, is you have vacant land and commercial property that is significantly undervalued on the assessment rolls. That choice of how we assess vacant land and commercial properties now significantly shifts the property tax burden onto single-family homes, renters, and everyone who does not enjoy the benefit of having their property be significantly underassessed. So when folks' green cards come out in the mail and they see their assessments climb, but if you go out on the MLS and look at land for sale, and then you go compare that asking price at sale and then what it sells for to the assessed value, you see a big difference. When you go look at many commercial properties and do the same calculation, you see a big difference. However, as we look at what properties turn over more, those homes, maybe some fourplexes or multifamily buildings, you see those numbers, they tend to align more closely. That means that those folks, both renters and homeowners, they are paying taxes on very close to the full and true value of their property. Whereas people that live on vacant land and enjoy some benefit from commercial property, they pay less. So as we look at how I crafted this, and I specifically called out the permanent place of abode or your primary residence on here to reflect how people typically get the residential exemption that was mentioned by the senator from Wasilla. It's meant to benefit the little guy. It's meant to benefit people who are out there trying to make it. Grandma and grandpa or great auntie and uncle who have lived in their home for a long time and now they've retired and now they see climbing and climbing tax bills, and that's not good. That hits people really hard. And so there are different ways that we can seek to change that. They're a significantly heavier lift than this. I talked a little bit about in my remarks about possibly splitting the role. That can be done. It's been done in some other states, but that is significantly a larger legislative project than what we have here before. This is just an optional program that would give folks a break on their assessments a little bit at a time.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Dunbar?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that I agree with Ms. Senator from the Kenai Peninsula about the fact that we have properties that are pretty dramatically undervalued and underassessed. That includes some residential properties in Anchorage, at least, where I'm more familiar with. And it is the case that a lot of times folks will be upset about their assessment. And then if you ask them, a commercial property, for example, okay, well, will you sell your commercial property for your assessed value? No, of course not. I'm not going to sell at that value. We could solve all of this by having Alaska become a mandatory disclosure state where we just tell people what things cost when they're purchased. But that was attempted here in Juneau, and folks were so upset about it, they repealed it through ballot initiative. So we have sort of voluntarily blinded our public officials to what things actually are worth. You know, we've forsaken that data. And so you get anomalies in these assessments, as the senator has indicated. What I'm worried about here is if the state gives municipalities the ability to do this, my experience working at the local level in Anchorage is that the sort of most disempowered group in, at least in Anchorage, and I think in most other places, are renters, are folks. And some of them have lived there a long time. Some of them also are seniors, but they tend to not have the means or the time to participate in things like community councils or to donate in elections. And so it is quite easy to do things that harm them financially while benefiting homeowners. And I'm a homeowner myself. I get it. Like I know that's a very powerful group. And so it is always popular to help homeowners. But again, at least in Anchorage, because of the way the tax cap works, if you're holding down the values of homes, then you are going to be increasing the values of rental units because we don't allow the residential property tax exemption. And I don't think number two would apply to multifamily housing. And so the senator is correct. I'm sure it is difficult to split the roles because we do – those multifamily housing units can be built on commercially zoned land, at least in Anchorage. You can be zoned B3 and have a multifamily housing project there. And so you can have something that is technically commercial that is residential as a lived experience for the person that actually lives there. And so it is a challenge. And we have done things recently like increase the residential property tax exemption that have done exactly what I described. That is, they have shifted the burden onto those multifamily housing units and onto those renters. I'm hesitant to go forward with this bill as it's currently written. But I realize we haven't opened public testimony either. I don't know if there are folks from the municipalities who are here to testify. If not, I would hope that we could reach out to them.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar. With that, I will open public testimony on Senate Bill 259. Is there anyone in the room wishing to testify? Seeing no one, we will move online. We have Lisa Bass from Soldotna. Ms. Bass, if you could please state your name, affiliation, and location for the record and begin your testimony.
Hi, my name is Lisa Bass. I live in Soldotna, Alaska, and I am representing myself. I'm in support of SB 259. I do appreciate the talk here. I feel like it should include all renters. That's one thing, but I'm going to read what I have prepared. This bill gives municipalities the option to cap the assessed property values. It helps slow the rapid increase of property assessment that many communities, mine and others, are experiencing. These rapid increases are shifting the burden of school funding. There's a whole different problem from what you're talking about, from the state to the municipalities. The state has the constitutional obligation to fund education, but the municipalities do not. Though education, luckily, is a top priority at the Kenai Peninsula Borough, we just can't keep up. The municipality can't keep up. Without some kind of action like this bill, the shift creates growing inequities and places additional strain on local communities, and we are already stretched thin. We are at an $8 million deficit. We're already seeing the impacts. Student programs are being cut, library aid, counselors, in several cases, entire schools, and I'm sure our community is not the only one. This puts tremendous additional pressure on our families. It reduces opportunities for youth across Alaska. If this continues, it's definitely going to push more families out of the state, and that is not what we want. This bill is an important step towards stabilizing these impacts while we continue to advocate for strong state responsibility and support for education. Thank you for your time and consideration, and I appreciate you, Senator Bjorkman, for bringing up this bill. I am also a renter, and even if I wasn't, I do think there needs to be equity. It should be all residential properties. Thank you, and I appreciate all your work.
Thank you, Ms. Bass. Is there anyone else online wishing to testify? Seeing no one, I will close public testimony. We'll take it in at ease. I call the committee back to order at 2:14 p.m. Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Borkman, for bringing this bill forward, because it will offset the rising costs that result from increased assessed values, especially for seniors on fixed income. But I have another concern that I'm going to mention, but I'm going to do my own research to figure out if where my thought process is correct. In the municipality of Anchorage, we have service areas, okay, and taxes paid are equal to the mill levy on each of those service areas. So in my mind, if you limit, besides the shifting part, if you limit the assessed value, eventually it's going to result in less taxes to pay for services. But I'm not asking the question. I'm going to do my own research. But I just wanted to put that thought process out there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Further discussion from the committee. Senator Yunt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just a quick closing comment on something that was mentioned earlier in regards to commercial properties and raw land being undervalued or undervalued at the local level, therefore undertaxed. And that is a massive issue in my community. I can't speak for all the others. Folks will have to do their own homework. But raw land in the Matsu Borough is taxed at a much, much, much lower rate than it would sell for in the free market. And so what you're doing then is you're passing the burden on to homeowners, commercial to property owners, everybody else. And so it is something that I think local assessors are going to want to take a look at. So thanks.
Thank you, Senator Yunt. Senator Bjorkman, closing comments?
Thank you again, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for hearing this bill. I appreciate all of the questions and comments. And I think to look at the optionality, again, of this bill, that the assembly at any municipal level would have to choose. They would have to select to do this. And it would be their free choice to do that. I think as we look at large-scale projects that may happen in our state and drive up values, whether it be a gas line or any other development that might happen in our communities, we would see some very significant increases in assessed value over a short period of time that would be very uncomfortable for many, many homeowners. And so as we look at those processes, I think we have putting optional tools in the toolbox that folks can use if they want to is a thing that we might be well served by. So I appreciate you all taking time to hear Senate Bill 259 today.
Thank you, Senator. We will set Senate Bill 259 aside for further consideration. Next up is a first hearing on Senate Bill 247, Generated Obscene Child Sex Abuse Material, by Senator Keel. Welcome, Senator. If you could place your name and affiliation on the record, as well as your staff, we would love to hear your introduction of Senate Bill 247. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. For your records, my name is Jesse Keel, and I have the privilege of representing Senate District B, the northeast part of Southeast Alaska. With me this afternoon is James Oglesby, the University of Alaska Ted Stevens Foundation intern working in my office this year. I appreciate the committee taking time to hear Senate Bill 247 this afternoon. I'm sorry it's not as enjoyable a topic as the other ones, but it is an important and a serious one. The rapid growth of artificial intelligence is leading to the ability to generate images, generate videos, generate vast amounts of content, and that ability is growing fast. Unfortunately, along with the ability to modify or create your own cute cat videos out of out of cats, some people use these technologies to terrible effect. Senate Bill 247 addresses computer-generated or otherwise generated child sexual abuse materials. It amends Alaska law to create parity between generated child sexual abuse materials and non-generated child sexual abuse materials, what we think of as photos or videos that have not been modified of real children. It does so by creating two crimes, the crime of possession and the crime of distribution of generated child sex abuse material. These are cover images where the subject in the image is not demonstrably or provably a single actual child. Nevertheless, we know a number of things. We know that artificial intelligence is basically, when it comes to images, a highly sophisticated collage machine, and that images are made, ultimately, from things that are real. Those are the data sources of millions, often billions, of real images on which these large language models, these artificial intelligences, so to speak, are trained. Senate Bill 247 reinforces and strengthens Alaska's existing laws by applying the test for obscenity created by the U.S. Supreme Court in the Miller case. You will often hear it simply called the Miller test, to these generated images. Thus, when we have obscene materials where we cannot prove that a single individual real child is depicted in the images, we do not have a First Amendment defense to these horrifying pictures and videos. The bill sets the punishments for generated child sexual abuse materials on par with, equal to, non-generated CSAM. That avoids overburdening or bogging down law enforcement resources, court system resources, with the difficulty of proving that an amalgamated image has a real child under the age of 18 in it. Madam Chair, that, in a nutshell, is what the bill does. We are available to the committee if you would like to run through the sectional analysis, or we can take questions. I know there's some invited testimony online as well.
Thank you, Senator Keel. Questions or comments from committee members? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do we have anyone from the Department of Law available today?
We do not. Senator Keel.
Madam Chair, thank you. The Department of Law sends their regrets. They intend to have someone available at the committee's. I believe the bill is noticed for Thursday at the committee's next meeting.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I put a question out that either you could answer or perhaps we could have them answer in the future?
Yes. Senator Dunbar.
My first question is about mens rea and what the mens rea requirements are for the crime. It seems like it is a strict liability crime, but I could be misreading it. And so is there a knowing, reckless, or negligent mens rea, as there typically is in criminal case? And sort of related to that, what exactly does generated mean? And so I'll give you an example. Junior high kids scribbling, you know, sexual material portraying themselves or others in their class, you know, certainly something we don't want to happen, certainly something we want to punish, but perhaps not expose them to criminal liability. And so I'm wondering if that child would themselves become, you know, subject to this ordinance, I'm sorry, this statute.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill does set a mental state of knowingly.
Okay.
That is the baseline in our statutes, and in distribution, we do not specify a different state. In fact, it is made explicit in possession. with regard to the edge cases, for anything that is in this category of generated, the Miller test has to apply. And so that's a highly situation-specific, fact-specific analysis that is done to meet the tests that the U.S. Supreme Court has set out for what is obscene material. It is extremely unlikely that children's doodles are going to hit that threshold. I would be shocked to see a prosecutor bring a case where kids drawn on the playground are at issue. What we're really aiming at here, and what I think the requirements of proving obscenity under the Miller test will bring about, is material that truly depicts the horrifying things that some people do ask these AI systems to generate for them.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. We will move to invited testimony. We have Trevor Storrs, the President and CEO of the Alaska Children's Trust, online. Mr. Storrs, if you could please state your name, affiliation, and location for the record, and begin your invited testimony. Mr. Storrs.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can now. Please proceed.
Fantastic. Sorry. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Trevor Storrs, President and CEO of the Alaska Children's Trust, and I'm currently in Anchorage, Alaska. As many of you know, we are the statewide lead organization focused on the prevention of child abuse and neglect. Thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of Senate Bill 247. Generated obscene child sexual abuse material, or as we refer to it as CSAM. CSAM is the term that has replaced child pornography in both common usage and thanks to recent legislative action in Alaska statute. The Alaska Children's Trust applauds the legislature for updating this language and recognizing that the new terminology more accurately reflects the grave realities of these crimes. The real prevalence of child sexual abuse is not known because so many victims do not disclose or report their abuse. However, adult representative or retrospective studies by the CDC has shown that 1 in 4 women and 1 in 6 men were sexually abused before the age of 18. And we know Alaska has one of the highest rates per capita of child sexual abuse in the nation. And here are some statistics. Child sex abuse cases reported by Child Protective Services nearly doubled from 155 in 2015 to a peak of 295 in 2020, before settling at 252 in 22. Over this period, sexual abuse grew as a share of all child maltreatment cases, rising from 5% in 2015 to 10% in 2022. From 2013 to 2015, 13.7% of Alaska adults reported experiencing child sexual abuse. And in 2020, 35% of Alaska women reported experiencing sexual abuse when they were a child. AI-generated CSAM represents one of the most urgent and fast-moving threats facing children today. In 2023, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children received 4,700 reports of AI-related CSAM. By 2024, that number had grown to 67,000. And in the first half of 25 alone, they received more than 400,000 such reports, an average of over 2,000 every single day. At the same time, extortion, where offenders use real or IA-generated images to blackmail children, continues to surge. In 23, an estimated 186,000 American children were victims of sextortion. By the first half of 25, financial extortion, sextortion, reports to the NCMEC had nearly doubled compared to the same period the year before. And the NCMEC is aware of at least 36 teenage boys who have taken their own lives as a result of sextortion. These are not emerging threats on the horizon. They are happening now in our communities to our children. And Alaska is not immune to this issue. In 24, an Army soldier stationed at Joint Base Ellensburg-Hutchinson was arrested for creating AI-generated CSAM. This case revealed that Alaska has no state statute addressing it, and the soldier was prosecuted under federal law. And in conversations with law enforcement, sextortion is happening to Alaska's children on a regular basis. The impact of child sexual abuse is lifelong. Survivors face dramatically higher rates of depression, anxiety, PTSD, substance abuse, and suicide. And they often struggle with relationships, education, and economic stability well into their adulthood. And for victims of CSAM, the trauma never fully ends as the knowledge that their images of their abuse exist may be shared indefinitely means they are re-victimized every time that material is accessed. Advances in AI technology have made it possible to create sexual images of children that are indistinguishable from real children, and at times they use real children as models. The creation and the circulation of child sexual abuse material, whether involving real or synthetic image,
normalizes exploitation, fuels demand, and perpetuates harm. This bill, Senate Bill 247, ensures our legal system keeps pace with these emerging threats by addressing a critical gap in Alaska law. This bill aligns Alaska with the national and international legal landscape. Research by NAFTA Abuse shows that 45 states have criminalized AI-generated or computer-edited child sexual abuse material. SB 247 appropriately expands Alaska's criminal statutes to ensure that individuals who create, possess, or distribute this material can be held accountable. This legislation is an opportunity to close the loophole that is actively exploited and sends a clear message: Alaska is not a haven for this form of abuse. It will not stop child sexual abuse or sextortion, but it is a step in the right direction. On behalf of the Children's Trust, I urge your support again of Senate Bill 247. Thank you for the opportunity to share, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Storrs. Those are some staggering statistics. I see no questions from the committee. We appreciate you being here today. Senator, any closing comments on this important issue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Mr. Storrs did an excellent job of providing some of the statistics. And so I commend the bill to the committee. The goal is to have it integrate seamlessly with the Alaska's existing laws to criminalize this behavior where there is an identifiable, provable individual child, so that we can address material that meets the obscenity test that portrays the same behavior with kids of the same ages. With that, happy to take any further questions or await the committee's pleasure.
Thank you, Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm just reading through the bill here, page 3, line 7, trying to get to the definition of what it means, generate obscene CSAM. If the person knowingly possesses or knowingly accesses on a computer with intent to view. So does this get to what we were talking about before, Senator Keel, that is, you know, can't be doodles on a playground because it must be on a computer? Or is, I guess my question is, the phrase on a computer, is that only attached to accesses or is that attached also to possesses? You see what I'm saying? On page 3, lines 6 and 7.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, if I could get the question one more time, I'm sorry. Which verb attaches to which now?
Senator Dunbar.
If a person knowingly possesses or knowingly accesses on a computer, so can you possess a generated image like this if it's not on a computer? You see what I'm saying? So you access it on a computer, and that's typically the way these things are done. But it would alleviate any concerns about the doodles, because the doodles are not happening on a computer, right? On the other hand, if the on a computer phrase only attaches to accesses, and possesses is a broader term where it could also be printed material, then I still think that concern. I agree it's an edge case, but it's also true that sometimes edge cases can be held over particularly vulnerable minority groups historically. That's my question. Is the intent that these kind of – because I don't think, unless I'm mistaken, I'm looking through here, that generated CSAM is sort of a defined term in here. Is it a defined term in here?
So, Madam Chair, now we have two questions, but thank you. So we do not independently define the term generated child sexual abuse material. The definition of child sexual abuse material in our existing law applies and governs here. The way the bill is written, it does separately criminalize possessing generated child sexual abuse material, whether that is a printout or some other form of, again, obscene material. That depicts someone obviously under the age of 18, engaged in the behaviors that are specified elsewhere in Alaska law. And I didn't run through those, Madam Chair. They're in the existing definition of child sexual abuse material. I'm happy to provide that for the committee if you'd like. So both to possess in any format or to access on a computer, which does not require ownership of the thing.
Got it.
Senator Dunbar.
Yeah, I think that answers my question. So it is a broader term for possessions, possessing it, whether it's printed or on a computer, which means that while CSAM is defined, and the question that CSAM is obscene and using the obscenity provision, I think that's totally clear. For me, it's what does it mean to generate these materials? That is it the – because we're talking about AI, right? And we're talking about computer programs doing this, and that is – a little different in people's colloquial understanding from someone just sort of drawing it by hand, if that makes sense. But I guess my question is, do you intend to criminalize both? And, you know, we're sort of building a legislative record here that might in the future be used in a prosecution. And so that's sort of my question is the term generated here, is the thinking that it means generated by a computer or a computer program?
Mr. Oglesby, please place yourself on the record. Yeah. Welcome to the committee.
Through the chair, James Oglesby, staff to Senator Keel. Thank you. When we use the term generated, we do mean obviously AI generated, like by the computer, but it would extend as well to hand-drawn or painted or anything like that. But that is fundamentally where the Miller test comes in, because if you had, for example, the doodle that the child makes on the playground, or as Senator Keel was saying earlier, you would be very hard-pressed to find that it appeals to the prurient interest, that it, you know, defies community standards on obscenity. Mm-hmm. So while it would, at least I believe, extend to that, it is an extreme edge case that you would not find like going to being prosecuted.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Anything further from committee members? Senator Yunt.
Just quick comment. Thank you, Madam Chair. Obviously there are some legal things that we'll have to flush through and make sure that we get right before we pass it. But I want to thank the sponsor for bringing this forward. We are definitely headed in the right direction, and the world's changing fast, and I am glad that you are taking this up, because this is it's disgusting, some of the things that people are making. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Yunt. With that, we will set Senate Bill 247 aside for further consideration. And then we will move to Senate Bill 258, Contract Licensing Software Applications, also by Senator Keel. Senator, if you and your staff honor Miller Austin, would come forward, place yourselves on the record, and begin your bill introduction.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for your record, Senator Jesse Keel, District B, with me is Honor Miller Austin in my office. Senate Bill 258, Madam Chair, members of the Community and Regional Affairs Committee, is in its underlying statutes a procurement bill, but what it is a fair and efficient government bill. Whatever the government buys, it should buy based on merit, performance, security, interoperability, time to value, long-term cost. These are factors that make sense, that belong in our procurements, and they are how it ought to be done. Governments buy a fair amount of software these days, just as the private sector does, to improve productivity, to provide better services across all levels of government. We use it in just about everything, and where we haven't yet, it seems we soon will. This bill is designed to protect Alaska governments, both the state of Alaska and municipalities, from artificial lock-in to any particular software provider. That's a fiscally responsible approach, because competition in the long term lowers costs. In recent years, some software licensing agreements have started including terms that require the user, require the customer to move existing products, existing software applications to the vendor's preferred cloud environment instead of letting an agency or a business operate those systems on their own servers, whether on premises or in the cloud on another provider. A government should decide for itself where and how best to run a software program. They should be able to weigh cost, security, operational readiness, sustainability, lifecycle cost. Somewhat more concerning, some licensing contracts prohibit using specific competitors' cloud infrastructure. Pushing public entities into captive contracts limits competition and restricts flexibility. Over time, that stands to increase costs, reduce flexibility, and undermine a state or a local government's ability to make technology decisions based on performance, based on value, based on total cost. So Senate Bill 258 is the fix. Under Senate Bill 258, a software license would not be allowed to restrict where a state or a political subdivision of the state, municipalities, school districts, chooses to run its software applications. You can choose cloud services, you can choose on-premises systems, or, as more and more of the private sector is doing these days, a hybrid model. The bill, importantly, does not stop a public sector entity from going all one if that's what they choose. If their analysis determines that's going to provide the best value to the citizens and the taxpayers, they may do so. But the key here is who chooses. Under Senate Bill 258, the government entity accountable to the citizens should be the one that makes that choice. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Questions for the bill sponsor? Senator Dunbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Keel, for bringing this legislation. This committee has also heard and passed through a bill that I brought having to do with the right to repair that I think is sort of motivated by the same kind of ethos. That is to say, we've seen some very large corporations engage in monopolistic and anti-competitive behavior using software primarily as the cudgel to make it impossible for people to make their own choices or service their own products. My question is, so this is, I believe, just for government agencies, correct, entities. Was there ever any thought to broadening this also to private consumers? And have any other states looked to do that, or is that sort of out of the realm of possibility?
Senator Keel.
Madam Chair, every version of this bill that I've seen, and I've based this on the actions of a number of other states, red, blue, and purple, who have passed this bill or something like it, applies to public sector entities rather than get involved in directly the operations of the private sector market.
More's the pity. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Seeing nothing further, any closing comments?
No. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for taking the time this afternoon.
Thank you, Senator Keel. This concludes our agenda for this afternoon. Our next meeting will be on Thursday at 1:30 p.m. We will continue considering Senate Bill 247 and Senate Bill 258. We will have first hearings, as time allows, on Senate Bill 268, sick leave exemption fish processors, and Senate Bill 153, public meetings, exempt muni service area boards. With that, we are adjourned at 2:43 p.m. Thank you.